Welcome to Financial Perspectives, the podcast, where we cover timely topics related to the current economic environment and keep you up to date on investment news. We also provide insights on how investors can maintain a long-term perspective. Please stick around at the end for important disclosure information. More information about Foster Group can be found in our ADV brochure at fostergrp.com.
Welcome to this edition of Financial Perspectives. In this edition, we have a special guest, Mary Ellen Stanek. Mary Ellen is the founder and managing director, as well as the co-chief investment officer of Baird Asset Management. They're an institutional fixed income manager managing literally billions of dollars in fixed income for clients, including those of Foster Group. Just a quick bio on Mary Ellen. She has 45 years of investment experience, as you'll hear me say in the interview. She must have started when she was a young teenager, managing a broad range of those fixed income portfolios. She's responsible for the formulation of fixed income strategy, as well as the development and implementation of those portfolios. She also serves on the board of Baird Financial Group and is the president of Baird Funds and is chair of the Baird Diversity Steering Committee. Mary Ellen just offers a unique range of perspectives and experience. I'm going to talk to her a little bit about the history of markets and what she sees in terms of changes in the marketplace and the workplace. As well, I've talked to her about the conference that they host every year, where she invites unique speakers, usually authors or people who've been in leadership positions, to share their perspectives on kind of the global environment. It expands, I think, for conferees, people who attend, their view of the world, the risks and opportunities that are out there, and things that we should be thinking about. I think you're really going to enjoy my conversation with Mary Ellen Stanek. So, Mary Ellen, thank you so much for giving us some of your valuable time for this conversation today. I really appreciate it, and I think that the folks who are joining us are going to enjoy and benefit from kind of your experience and your thinking over the years. It's just a pleasure to have you. So thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Kent.
You know, I was looking back, the last time we had you on was November of 2021, and I just made a list of things that have kind of changed since then. At that time in late 21, the three-month U.S. Treasury rate was 5 basis points, 5/100 of a percent. Today, it's hovering around 5.25%. That's just almost an unfathomable percentage increase in rates. So that's had a lot of impacts, obviously, on your business as bond managers. We've also seen a war begin and not end in Ukraine. Inflation, we saw, you know, reach over 9%, depending on what part of the world you were looking at. The death of Queen Elizabeth, kind of an institution, at age 96. And then last October, of course, the terrorist invasion into Gaza with Hamas and Israel now ratcheting up that conflict to just almost, you know, it's an unbelievable scale of destruction and things there. So hard things, some confusing things. Also, on a lighter note, I know the Packers traded Aaron Rodgers to the Jets. And that was, I know you're a Packer fan, but it seemed like things came together under your quarterback, Jordan Love. You made the playoffs still, so good step in the
right
direction.
And we survived, right?
And you survived, yes. So the world is a little bit different than when we last talked, for sure, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like this quote. Dan Kahneman says, "The thing to learn from surprises is that the world is a surprising place." So as you think about the last, since the last couple of years ago, since we last talked, what things have surprised you?
Yeah, so your list is a long one. And even though November 21, in terms of what has happened, sounds like a long time ago, it really wasn't that long ago. It's only two and a quarter years. And you think of what we've endured, including a banking crisis and a real estate crisis and on and on. So the list can get really long. But to your point, let's start on interest rates. When interest rates were abnormally low and at 5 basis points, and rates were staying lower longer, and that was engineered by the Fed for a lot of different reasons. When you're that low, you know it's a matter of time before there will be some upward bias on rates. We and just about everyone else was stunned by how quickly and the magnitude of that move up. And it basically occurred from the end of 2021, you know, into 2022, and continues to be really holding at much higher interest rate levels, as you suggested, and an inverted yield curve than when we had. That's the march up. And the surprise was the resilience of the Fed and the commitment of the Fed to just keep going. And why? Because they wanted to eradicate this embedded inflation, or the implication of embedding a higher rate of inflation, and how hard that would be to eradicate it from consumers' behavior, the way businesses operate, the economy. So that has been really probably the biggest surprise. The good news is we sit now with much higher yields, and we have what I would call normalized interest rates over the last couple of years, particularly most of all in 2022.
Yeah, that's interesting. The normalization of interest rates, depending on your age and what you've experienced, these rates may not feel very normal. I know for me, I look at a mortgage rate today and go, oh, it's still a relatively reasonable rate. For my children who are buying homes for the first time in the times of really unusually low rates, they think of these rates as not normal, a kind of unusually high. So it's an interesting perspective depending on what you've lived through, for sure. Which I have this first section where I wanted to talk with you a little bit about what I'm calling historical perspective taking. Certainly rates are like that. I've been reading a book by Morgan Housel called Same as Ever, and I'd highly recommend it to anyone listening or watching. But what Morgan talks about there is, he says, though the circumstances change over time, the actual events themselves, the underlying behavior and responses of people and the makeup of people really remains what he would say kind of the same as ever, which also reminds me of kind of ancient wisdom from King Solomon when he said in Ecclesiastes, hey, there's nothing new under the sun here. And so, yeah, that was thousands of years ago. So, you know, Morgan's book is interesting, but it's not the first time someone said that some things seem to remain the same. When you think back over, you know, your 45 years of professional investing, and I say 45 years only because it's in your bio, and I assume you started investing when you were a very early teenager. But in terms of your experience, you know, what would you say that has significantly really changed in those 45 years?
Well, some things have changed a lot and other things not so much. Structurally, the market, it has changed and is different. And by that, one of the things that we pay a lot of attention to is all the players in the market, both buyers and sellers, because the market is really just like any other. The price that bonds trade effectively in the market clears is where you meet that match, right? And and Wall Street historically played a huge role. They would bid, if you showed up today and had a list of bonds you wanted to sell, Wall Street would bid for their own inventory and then mark it up and try to sell it to somebody like ourselves. Today, Wall Street plays a much smaller role. They're really matchmaker. They do not have nearly as much capital relative to the size of the market committed to their bond trading desk. So what ends up happening is, if you get selling pressure and big sellers showing up, Wall Street's trying to match that seller with potential buying interests like someone like ourselves. And so understanding market structure and those motivations, there are other pools now of capital, pretty significant ones that are more trading oriented. Certainly the development of a lot of the derivatives market, all of that just adds a level of complexity to it all. That said, the market is still based on a lot of really fundamental analysis. And then what people refer to is the technicals, meaning the buyers and sellers and what are their motivations and their time horizons. The other big thing that's changed is technology and the use of technology. You think about what technology looked like 45 years ago and how now you're able to have, you could be inundated with information and data, but still what's most important in a lot of ways, it makes us more efficient, but you still have to be trained to really pay attention to what matters most and what's going to drive the economy, what's going to drive inflation rates, what's the likely impact on sectors of the economy, and ultimately on spreads and prices. So, you know, I could argue the things that have changed a lot, but some of those things that you need to pay attention to have not changed at all. And that's why we manage money the way we do. Stay laser-like focused on the capital market benchmark that the portfolio is designed to track and meet the needs of your investors, and spend time very carefully managing risk and taking advantage of opportunity per level of risk that we see in the marketplace. That is exactly the same as it was when I was a very young analyst in the late 1970s.
Oh, yeah. I think about the flow of information. Certainly, that's just become almost inundating to a level. I was sharing with you this quote that I saw the other day where a guy was saying, you know, you want to take in as much information as possible, which is just an amazing amount of information, but then you need to filter out almost 95% or more of it in terms of what's really going to get you to a decision point. So yeah, the sheer volume of information now that we're experiencing, you know, to be able to say, yep, this is all coming in, but to recognize that maybe 5% or less of it is actually going to meaningfully shape our decision. That's a hard balance, I think, because we want to respond to all this information, and it's almost a more difficult exercise to say, I can know this, but I don't have to respond to it.
No, that is an excellent point, and maybe isn't even 5%. But yeah, yeah. We're just working on with our director of credit this morning and talking about some of our younger analysts and trying to get, you know, whatever the thesis is, down to one sheet of paper. They can have all the backup. It can be 17 pages of, you know, this spreadsheet and that. But, you know, the key points, what are the key drivers? Because if you can train yourself to look for what's most compelling, what matters most, it will allow you to filter and take that and also be out there looking. The other thing we try to do on the information side is make sure, and it's human beings, right, running these portfolios. And, you know, it's natural tendency to look for confirming bias, right? In terms of, if I've got a point of view or see the world a certain way, I'm looking for information to support that. And always making sure you're surrounding yourself with people who will say, yeah, but... And often it's some of our newest, youngest people. And we say to them, you know, have voice, speak up, ask us questions, because they may see the world very differently than I do. And there may be something in there that we just not completely calibrated for.
Yeah. Well, I know that one of your personal interests, obviously, is the workplace environment and people's development and who's coming into the workplace to provide those kind of diverse opinions. How would you say the workplace has changed, you know, over the course of your career?
So it's changed a lot and it hasn't. So some things that have changed, certainly, you know, the flexibility and the dress code and all of that. You know, we still have a professional dress code, but admittedly, that definition has been broadened and expanded. We do believe it's really important for us to be physically in the office, you know, at least a core group of the team or most of the team 5 days a week. And we know that we develop talent more broadly if we are working side by side. And so we have a commitment to doing that. Our leaders need to be very good at what they do and what they specialize in, but also a commitment to develop talent around them. And that is better done, no question about it, in person. And so, but, you know, what has changed is we've upped, and this is one of the benefits of technology. We have upgraded everyone's personal technology so that they can work from home occasionally beyond. We've put in this year, we're trying a pilot program where we've got some work from home bank of days that people can use and schedule. And so we're looking for ways to give people some of that flexibility that they're hoping for and need, but yet continue to meet the needs of our investors and our clients. And, you know, it's a journey. But continuing to be open-minded and listen carefully, because how someone is experiencing the workplace when you're 35, I just said to myself driving in today. My 35-year-old self balancing three children and a husband's dental career and life and all the things we're doing in the community might be very different than, you know, me as a grandmother and now, you know, as Scott and I try to navigate life. So anyway, I mention it because it's just really important. And so we pay a lot of attention to, you know, survey data. We've been best place to work for 20 straight years on the Fortune list. But more importantly, we look at the data coming back to us and try to analyze that all with the lens of, you know, getting better and how we can keep a beat on and understand what matters to our, you know, very important asset, the most important asset we have, our people.
Yeah, yeah. So I know... the kind of this word diversity in the workplace is kind of, it means different things to different people. But I know you guys are thinking about a lot of demographic, like how do we bring new people on, younger people, who's going to be the leaders in the future? How does that look to you today versus maybe, you know, I don't know, 20 years ago or something like that in terms of how you're building your team?
Well, so there's a lot of intentionality, and there always has been a lot of intentionality, but with scale and scope, we have to cast the net wider. We are going earlier and younger, and by that, I mean we, and this gets to really our DNA and how we're wired as a team and our firm in terms of supporting the community. We are investing heavily in pipeline programs, and by that, I mean... You know, the Crystal Ray Jesuit High School that got started here in Milwaukee 8-9 years ago. We've had interns. We have now a full-time associate who started with us when she was 14 years old. She's now in her ninth year at Baird. And we're sure someday she will be the longest tenured employee. But she never really had an access or even imagined what it would be like to be in a firm like ours or what was possible. So whether it's all in Milwaukee scholarship programs, partner programs with schools and universities, but continuing to support so we can give young people of all backgrounds, really an opportunity to come in and on an internship. And then we don't hire 100% of our interns full time, but the ones we have been just great, great talent. 20% of the teams come through as former interns. We call it the rent-to-own strategy. We chuckle when we say that. But it's a chance for our interns to test drive us and the career and the work. And is this something that they may want to try to do?
Yeah, that's great. Good. I know we're doing the same thing, trying to increase our, you know, reach into universities and say, hey, where do we contact people even younger to, one, you know, it's great to have them here to work with us. We think they learn, we learn, and then you do identify, you know, great talent, hopefully, along the way.
Yeah, their technology skills, they have around me. But, you know, with a serious note, we're in the business as investment managers. You know this, we're in the business of managing risk, right? And laying out plans that can meet our investors' goals. And if we hire a team of people and field a team where we all grew up in the same neighborhood, went to the same schools, you know, had the same shared life experiences, you have an inbred myopia that potentially develops. And you just see, you have so much shared history and shared experience, it's hard to not have that bias. And so by continuing to build teams with very different backgrounds and support them in that, and have them pursue the credentials and the designations and the degrees and all those things that are so important in terms of developing the expertise and the experience, we believe we build a better mousetrap because we've got people that have lived different life experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of good quotes about risk being the things that we don't see. So in our own world, like my view, I have a certain amount of purview and there's things outside of my view that I wouldn't think of. They don't just cross my mind for whatever reason. If someone else has a different purview, their view of risk actually is going to widen our team's view of risk just because they're going to see more. At least more potential risk.
More potential. And yeah. The key is to give them voice, you know, encourage them to ask the questions and, you know, and try to learn and understand, because chances are we're going to learn a lot too.
Yeah, exactly. So just kind of broaden this out for a second, and then we'll go to the some conversations about guests and things that you've had at your conferences. But when you think about kind of, I'm both a little historical perspective taking, but also turning to the future, what do you think kind of in terms of globally, what are trends right now that are, you know, moving markets maybe that are, I guess I'd put it this way. What trends are maybe moving markets that in a real way, and what are things that maybe people are focused on that, in your view, are less important or maybe passing?
Sure. So the last several decades, we, you know, you would argue the markets benefited from this push to globalization, right? And that the traditional provincial geographic boundaries suddenly were gone. And in the move to globalization, we effectively lowered the cost to produce goods, mostly goods, a little bit services, but mostly goods. There is a trend now going the other way. And some of it is, you know, in the pandemic, and certainly with some of the global events that you had on your worry list, the need to reshore and have multiple sources for your supply chain has been ever more important. And so people are bringing more production or creating more partnerships, different partnerships closer to home that are, you know, potentially friendly, friendly economies and friendly geographies. And so that has changed and most likely is raising the cost to do business. But the consistency, the access to those supply chains and the consistent access to your supply chains is critically important. We've found that certainly as over the last, particularly 5 years, as we've lived through the pandemic and some of the issues. So that one is a big trend. To the extent you've got polarization globally in terms of different camps, we certainly have had different political systems and beliefs. At the moment, they feel more polarizing and polarized, and particularly some of the biggest world powers are experiencing that very much. So that is something that we just need to pay attention to and be aware, and how that can potentially impact different sectors, and whether how much should we be paying attention to what's going on in China versus how real is it versus how destabilizing it could or couldn't be. If it's just way they are, their growth rates are slowing, there's big issues with regard to their property market, their real estate market, asset bubbles. And one of the ticking less visible issues is the high levels of unemployment for younger people there. And at some point, how destabilizing is that? And will that, you know, cascade out? So I think some of those events we just need to pay close attention to. You mentioned certainly the Middle East and you know, the events of October 7th and beyond. And so it is there are a number of things that are impacting and are, again, concerning, worrisome for U.S. dollar denominated investors. And most investors, their objective or their liability, if you will, is dollar denominated. So thinking through, all right, what do we need to do to meet our objectives here, and what kinds of things should we think about that might create unexpected or more significant volatility? The flip side of that is that's opportunity. If you get, you know, if you get that that significant volatility, you get dislocations happening. People are selling because they need liquidity. Generally, that's a target-rich opportunity environment for us, because we're sitting there with liquidity. and discipline and can take advantage of wider spreads and opportunities. So I think those are some of the things, you know, the aging populations, not just here in the U.S., but throughout most of the globe, is definitely an issue to pay attention to. How much technology can be substituted for labor? How much AI can come in, you know, and lift productivity? That may be some buffer. Ultimately, what happens on immigration policy is important, because that ends up allowing for an additional source of labor coming in to the U.S. or other, you know, whatever market you're looking at, and can be actually helpful. It's unfortunate that discussion always gets so politicized, but when you look at economic systems, they can only grow as fast as their available labor pool, and then productivity on top of that. So if you're not naturally growing significantly, having that available additional source through immigrants can be very helpful to economic systems. So there's just all of those things you need to kind of see both sides to. And again, all with your focus and your plan.
That's a great long list. You know, it's, I guess it's the, we'll talk about this maybe in just a little bit here as we close, as we end up in a while, but that list, you know, is, that's our list today, but in almost every era, there's a list of length of things to pay attention to. I do agree, though, the idea of thinking about risk. The flip side of risk is opportunity. We talk about it all the time, embracing uncertainty. Without some degree of uncertainty, investors really aren't paid to bear the risk. But if we're smart and thoughtful about the risk that we choose to bear, diversify those risks that we're bearing, then the opportunity for return is real. But depending on how much return you'd like to get or how much uncertainty you're willing to bear, that may be more or less comfortable
along the way in terms of how we get there. And that's the key, is understanding your level of risk and your tolerance for that, and then what's your ultimate objective, and are those consistent? Can we figure out a way to deliver that? But you're right. There are the long list that we've both talked about, but things a year ago, it's almost a year ago to the day, who knew you could have a bank run by this? My father was a community banker, and he would have been 100 years old on Monday. And I was just thinking about this the other day as we were thinking about the run on Silicon Valley Bank and others last March. And it wasn't long lines necessarily queuing up.
Right.
It was done electronically in seconds. Yes. And, you know, those kinds of things, how do you prepare yourself for that kind of risk? Well, all right, so let's step back and look at these balance sheets. Let's look at these assets. Let's look at the mismatch, the asset liability underway. And there were some, you know, some telling signs after, but this ended up being, you know, the thing that is such a wonderful tool, but ended up being weaponized really in terms of a run on the bank. So you always have to be prepared for the unexpected, expect the unexpected, but have a plan in place to, and the bumper pads around your portfolios to be able to withstand it.
Yeah. Yeah. The world is still and will be a surprising place for as far as the eye can see, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Correct.
I'm going to change our direction here a little bit. I first attended your Baird Institutional Investor Conference in 2019, which was a really great year to begin to attend, because one of your guests that year was Condoleezza Rice, who I just found fascinating to listen to. But over the last 5 years, I've really enjoyed and benefited from the invitation. And I will say this, though, I do enjoy the golf quite a bit when I come to your conference. The things I probably take away the most, though, are just the speakers that you bring there and the variety of viewpoints and the kind of various walks of life that they represent. So they really bring a broad list of things. They usually will make some of them will make opening remarks or maybe an entire talk, but then you've often interviewed some in a fireside chat, a little more kind of drawing them out a little bit. Your guest list has been amazing since 2000. I got this from Mike. He sent me the list. So Steve Forbes was on that list, Bud Selig, Ian Bremmer's been there a couple times, Erskine Bowles talking about kind of political environments, Alan Mulally from Ford and Boeing, Bob Woodward, Condoleezza Rice, David Brooks. I mean, it was a pretty impressive list of folks that you have had, super interesting people. How do you choose who you are going to invite? You know, is there something about their particular level of expertise or who they are, somebody you've heard or read? It's a great list. How do you put it together?
All of the above in terms of how I go after it. Alan Mulally, of course, of Ford and Boeing fame, is the only one, though, that had a hole-in-one on one of the Kohler golf courses.
Oh. So good trip for him. Yeah.
He is very distinguished and from that vantage point. But it's a great question. You know, I would say, you know, all of us, our entire team, particularly the leadership investment team, has a list, and we're always, you know, we read a lot, we listen a lot, we attend meetings, and so we're always we have a working list, and then we also come over with who's available. Often some of the more significant names will be more available if they are releasing books. So we have learned that, or we have used personal relationships or the firm. So the commissioner of baseball, Bud Selig, was a very dear friend of our then chairman, Buddy and Freddie, they would call each other. And so he would not take any kind of speaker fee or anything. Of course, he'd come and do it for. So it's really, but in all seriousness, we look for a serious, very successful people in different all aspects of life. And, you know, a lot of the changes back then to Major League sports and particularly Major League Baseball, Bud Selig was, you know, very, very at the epicenter of all that, first as an owner and then ultimately as the commish. It's, you know, it's a little bit of all of the above. And, you know, I find it always fascinating to have them give us, you know, a half hour, 20 minutes, half hour, and then to start going deeper. And we work hard on a little bit of a script, and depending on the answers they give me on various questions. Sometimes I have to, and you've seen me go like,
yeah.
The infamous one was Condoleezza Rice. And I thought, oh, I've got the perfectly worded question. Have you ever considered running for president? And I thought, you know, even though she's not actually done it, have you ever considered? That's pretty broad, even for a second or two. She said, yeah. But point blank, no. I'm like, no. No, let me the question. And then I'm like, we had a good laugh about now I had to go like five pages ahead in my script. And she was really clear about for her, it's the policy work. It's the long-term impact. It's not the politics. It's not the running. And then she, you know, used other people in her life, particularly George Bush, who loved that part of it and thrived on the politics and particularly running for office. And so we and then we also look at societal change and try to get some in-depth view on that. So Jonas Prising, who's CEO of Manpower, you know, the world of work is really interesting. Running a global company, very good friend of ours. Manpower is based here in Milwaukee, and as a favor, has done it every 5 years or so. And we had him last year. Just fascinating discussion in terms of what we're seeing, you know, what's different and what's not. And so we try to, you know, bring provocateurs who can provide insight. And then we try to be just a little bit provocative in our questioning and see what, you know, how they can open up and give us a sense for themselves and what they are thinking, how they're wired, what their story is.
Yeah. Boy, they're just great conversations. I appreciate the breadth of the speakers that you're bringing in. When you think about your audience there, you know, again, this might be repeating, but when you think about the audience that you're gathering, what are you kind of hoping that they what, not specifically, but generally, what are you hoping that they're how are they going to benefit? What are they going to take away from that exposure?
Well, you know, just like, and I think of myself as an audience member is you know, I want to hear really bright people who have faced challenges head on, been successful, but are constantly learning. And there's insight that you get. And sometimes there will be something that, you know, someone will say, Jonas, last year, you know, there's this view that the younger generations, you know, think about all this so differently. And I forget how I exactly phrased the question. He's like, no, you know, the data would support, depending on where you are in life, how you answer the question. And he said, you know, 35-year-old you would have answered it, you know, back when you were 35 with young children. And it's, you know, again, it's something so basic in terms of, but for all those leaders sitting in our audience to go, you know, that's right. That's right. How do you get that 360 and make sure you're hearing those perspectives? So we try to deliver information and viewpoint, but also, you know, how and the why. David Brooks, you know, with the second mountain. And we know our audience, a lot of successful people may be thinking about what's my next chapter going to look like and what might I want to do. We would love the book, Arthur Brooks, but he teaches at Harvard on Mondays. And so, which is the day he would have to appear. And his all of his work on happiness is just, we think, one of those universal things that everyone is could benefit and is intrigued by. So at some point he may be zooming in to teach remote if we're successful, his class at Harvard. So those are some, right now, some of the ideas are, you know, AI and, you know, how people are, experts are thinking about that, but not from the technology and the quantitative, but more the practical, the policy, the limitations, the risks, so that no matter what your stage of life or your sector, to help you think through, you know, all of this and how much is real in terms of impact and how much is hype. What should I be concerned about? And what's going to actually be a benefit. So that's how we do it. It's a lot of fun. And if you ever, or anybody listening to this podcast has a great idea on a speaker, we are always open to ideas.
That's so, just one kind of follow-up question to that one. If you think about, man, dead or alive, the people who you wish you could interview, anybody on that list immediately come to mind and go, boy, I'd love to have had a chance to talk to that. Or maybe that's still a person who's a possibility. Are there a few people who you go, I'd really like to talk to them? You know, mentioned Arthur Brooks, who I think is great.
One that goes back way in the history books. And Scott and I, my husband and I, were able to actually see her because she was receiving an award here in Milwaukee in, I think it was 1982, was Mother Teresa. I would have loved to have spent some time and just, I mean, the clarity, the humbleness, the humility, but the focus, talk about focus and talk about a quiet leader. So she comes to mind. I think Ronald Reagan, you know, whatever your politics, I mean, talk about somebody who was a great communicator and somebody who was able to, you know, articulate a vision and optimism. I mean, you think back to the 80s, there were some kind of challenging times and people were hungry for something optimistic and a point of view. And again, not a political statement, but so I'm always fascinated by leaders who, and they come in all shapes and sizes, obviously Mother Teresa and Ronald Reagan are apart. But I think people like that no matter how difficult the things they face, you know, how they not just survive, but thrive and help others thrive. And that's, you know, that to me is just, I'm always in search of that.
Yeah. So. Those are great qualities, both the breadth, but also kind of the types of people for sure. A quote that I've come to like quite a bit goes, educated optimism is the antidote for anxious uncertainty. And I really like that because I think, you know, optimism can be naive, but if it's an educated optimism, and you know, that's a positive, the other side of that equation is uncertainty is always with us. We're not going to escape it. It just is part of the, it's part of the air that we breathe, the water that we swim in, if you will. But together, you know, I like the idea of it's possible to be optimistic even in the face of uncertainty. So I'd just like to ask you, you know, as you think about the future from where we sit right now, are you, you know, more optimistic or pessimistic? And maybe a little bit as to why that's the case.
Yeah, I am wired to be an optimist. And even if, you know, there's a bad day, you see, I have the 2-day rule. Sleep on it. And the next day, it's going to be better. And we are going to figure this out. And one of our kids had a fourth grade teacher who had a mantra, you believe it, you can achieve it. And I just wholeheartedly believe that. Educated optimism is great. Prepared optimism, prepared educated optimism, even better. And by that, you know, again, given what we do, having a plan and knowing what the plan is, and it's a long-term plan. It's not built around tomorrow or a month from now, but really, what are your life goals, and how do your financial assets fit into that? And so, to your point, uncertainty is always going to be there. I mean, a year ago, if we were doing this, neither of us, I don't think, would have forecast, certainly, you know, the Middle East war, or, you know, picking up my iPhone again, the run on the banks, or that, you know, and those are pretty chaotic, very uncertain. So uncertainty is always going to be out there. Uncertainty ends up creating opportunity, usually, for disciplined, focused, and, you know, and then I think that's how I'm wired. I don't know how you, I don't know how you get out of bed every day if you're not, if you don't believe that things will be better, and they will be better for your children and your grandchildren. And if they're not going to be better, you know, doggone it, we're going to work really hard to do everything we can to make it better. And that's, you know, the generosity and gratitude and pick a lane and get in there and help. And so that's, you know, that's part of my mantra. Pick a lane and help. And that, whether it's the education that we talked about earlier and building pipeline, talented pipelines, you know, that can help the businesses and the communities, or, you know, any of the other things we all do and out in the marketplace. We're later today, one of our Muni team, Dwayne McAllister, got us involved with supporting a charity called Ability Center, and it's a wheelchair basketball tournament. And so we've got three teams in there this afternoon, and we're the lead sponsor, and there's a little bit of a fundraising component, but it's all about, you know, what we think we've got challenges each and every day. And then you look at what it means and all that talent with various disabilities, they're just abilities that are packaged differently, and how we might be able to support. So it's a fun team building effort. We get a little competitive. There's something like 24 teams. So we're hoping that to rank relatively high. But one thing for sure, we are going to try to lead the pack on the fundraising side.
That's great. I think you kind of added three things to my front end of my comment there. It's like prepared optimism, educated optimism, but also constructive optimism. I mean, this is contributing, right? Those are just great things to take away. Well, Mary Ellen Stanek, as always, I enjoy our conversations. I enjoy, you know, have enjoyed getting to know you and your firm very much. I think you guys are just doing fantastic work, both for investors, but also, as you just alluded to, in your community, you're contributing in a very, very real way. So thank you so much for giving us so much of your time this morning. We're glad for that. And if you're shooting the basket this afternoon, I hope you make a lot of them.
let me make it clear. I authorized sponsorship and I lead the cheerleading on the side. I do not play myself, but yes, thank you. And Ken, thank you for the great partnership. We're just so honored.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you soon. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
So thank you for joining us today with our conversation with Mary Ellen Stanek. I hope you found it as interesting and enjoyable as I did. If you have ideas for people who we could interview on Financial Perspectives, please let us know. We love to talk to the people or address the questions that you're most interested in. And again, I'll close with the line, educated optimism is the antidote for anxious uncertainty. We believe that. It's obvious Mary Ellen does as well. So keep that in mind as uncertainty is all around us. We hope to see you soon. Thanks for joining us.
The previous presentation by Foster Group was intended for general information purposes only. No portion of the presentation serves as the receipt of, or as a substitute for, personalized investment advice from Foster Group or any other investment professional of your choosing. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and it should not be assumed that future performance of any specific investment or investment strategy, or any non-investment related or planning services, discussion, or content, will be profitable, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. Foster Group is neither a law firm nor accounting firm, and no portion of its services should be construed as legal or accounting advice. No portion of the content should be construed by a client or prospective client as a guarantee that he or she will experience a certain level of results if Foster Group is engaged, or continues to be engaged, to provide investment advisory services. A copy of Foster Group's current written disclosure brochure discussing our advisory services and fees is available upon request or at www.fostergrp.com/disclosures.